Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everyone. Welcome to the 40 Scenes Fire American Soccer Show, the 330th edition of the 40 Scenes Fire American Soccer Show. You can listen to me and my fellow, you can read me and my fellow writers at Once a Metro, one of the many other soccer websites of SB Nation. This is a Round 4 Lamar Hunt U.S. Open Cup preview show. And joining me right now is one of the owners of the Christos Liquor Discount Store down in Maryland, just outside of Baltimore. Mr. Nick Christopoulos is joining me right now to talk about this big, big run his amateur side is going through. Nick, thank you for being a part of the show tonight. And how are you, sir?
Good, Dale. Thank you for having me on. I appreciate it.
Not a problem at all. Thank you for coming on. So Tuesday night, tomorrow night, at the Boyd's Maryland Soccerplex in Boyd's, Maryland, not far away from you. You have an opportunity. Obviously, Larry Sandcombe, his coaching staff, along with the players, have this opportunity to take on DC United and possibly move on to the fifth round. Did you ever expect to see your side being such dominant in the Open Cup and playing such inspired soccer?
Daniel, to be honest with you, we've been a little spoiled. I mean, literally, we've sponsored a team for 20 years. And first of all, I'm extremely happy for the guys that are playing, for the original members, and anyone that's ever played for Christos. This is a dream come true. And about being spoiled, you know, they've won everything so often that I was a little nervous this year when they played Richmond. And then when they beat Richmond, the excitement grew. And then I'm not going to lie to you. I was so nervous when they played Chicago. I was having a hard time even watching the game. I would watch it. I'd turn it off. I'm watching it. I'd turn it off. I was just so nervous and just so excited when they won. It was a dream come true because, you know, all the original members, Cougar, who was Sean Smith, Larry, Jody, this guy's Mike, Darius, all the guys that built the team, the original guys and the existing members of the team, just so happy for them and what it's become. But it's sort of a joke. I would talk to Jody all the time, like, Jody, you ever think you guys could ever play DC United? And he, you know, we would talk about this just, you know, periodically over the years. And lo and behold, tomorrow night, Boyd's Maryland, they're playing DC United for the Lamar Hunt Cup to advance to the fifth round. And it's amazing. That's all I can say. Really excited about it.
You know, it's really amazing to talk about these moments. I mean, you know, you're in the Maryland state soccer division. Obviously, they run the amateur levels of Maryland soccer. And to hear your voice, to hear about, you know, this is a dream come true. You have an opportunity to take on, obviously, they're not far away. You're not far away from the nation's capital. You're going to take on DC United, a three-time Open Cup champion themselves, and with an opportunity to at least get to the fifth round draw to see who you might be facing against. I mean, this is where these dreams come true. This is where everyone loves to talk about the little guy who has a chance, as we like to say, Davey has a chance to knock off Goliath on a soccer field.
Exactly. It's exactly a David and Goliath story. I mean, it doesn't get any better than this. It's a phenomenal story, the ultimate Cinderella story. And like you said, knock on wood, hopefully tomorrow, you know, they can knock off DC United. So, we'll, you know, everybody's pumped. We're excited. Can't wait for tomorrow. And got my fingers crossed.
Absolutely. Let's talk about your family and your store for a second. When you got involved or when you were getting involved in the game in your town and in your area, I mean, did you ever think all these awards? I mean, I've seen the videos on U.S. Soccer's website in their Open Cup section. Did you ever thought you'd ever see something like this ever happen, you know, for you and your family to be, you know, sponsoring this amateur side?
Well, like I said, Dale, to be honest with you, no. But I'll just be honest with you, when they started, literally from the get-go, they wanted every level that they played at. And you could just see the momentum building. To be honest with you, like I said, I think I can speak for my family. It's not about us. It's about the players, you know, and anyone that's ever played for Christos. But you could see the momentum building. And to be honest with you, Daniel, like I said, we've gotten spoiled because literally at every level they've played, they've won. And you get a little, you know, like I said, I just expect them to win. And it's amazing what they've done over the years. So, like I said, it's not about the store. It's not about my family. My family is extremely, my brother John and my sister Medea and myself, we couldn't be happier for the guys. You know, but like I said, it's not about the store. It's about Christos FC. It's about the guys that are playing and anyone that's ever played. But no, like I said, we would talk about this, me and Jody Hayslip. We would joke around, like, Jody, wow, you know, it's amazing what you guys have done. You ever think you could play DC United? He goes, hey, you never know, and it's going to happen. It's incredible. It's like I said, we're so excited. I can't wait for tomorrow.
What's the excitement like around town, if you don't mind me asking?
At work, all the clothes that I wear are Christos Liquors. It just says Christos on it. And I live in Baltimore City. So, you know, after work, I have a small 20-month-old son who happens to be named Christo, and my nephew, my brother's son, who's about to turn 21, is also named Christo. But when I'll get home from work, I'll take my son for a walk, and I've got I always wear a Christo shirt, I always wear a Christo's FC hat, and the excitement level, Daniel, has been crazy. Everywhere I go, I'm walking with my son, and people are driving by in cars, go Christo's FC, I'm walking with my son, go Christo's FC, Christo's FC. I mean, it's just everywhere I'm walking, it's like the excitement around Baltimore, the buzz is insane. I mean, it's just I didn't realize how many people knew about this. You started to see the momentum build after they beat Richmond. That really put them on the map. They got a lot of press. And the momentum, the wave, it was just getting bigger. And then when they beat Chicago, I knew that it was going to be pretty crazy. The last week has been very surreal. I can't tell you how many TV stations have been to the store. Six, seven different TV stations. We had ABC News here today. Sports Illustrated did a piece on them. Washington Post has done two articles on them. So it's really, really it's like the story of the summer so far. It's really grown in the momentum, and the buzz is at a fever pitch right now. There's apparently – we have a bus leaving from the store tomorrow, and apparently there's buses going from all over Baltimore. So everyone's everyone's very excited.
Oh, my goodness, a bus. You might as well get three buses and bring the whole town over.
Daniel, there's more than three buses going. There's a lot of people going.
Really? This is going to be fantastic.
Daniel, I'll tell you what. I'm actually driving separately so I can leave spaces on the bus for people to go. And there's all these buses going from different parts of the city. So,
that is amazing. That is wonderful.
You're going to see a lot of Christos shirts there. You're going to see a lot of banners, a lot of Christos. People are extremely excited about this.
Well, that basically answers my question. I was about to ask you, how's it feel to be in your own backyard and you're going to be the road team? Absolutely not. Christos will be the road team with a hometown advantage.
Yes, I'm pretty sure it's going to be. You're absolutely right that they're going to be they're going to be away, but they're going to be the hometown advantage because I think it's literally going to be full of Christos FC fans. It's fever pitch. It's awesome.
This is why I love hearing about these stories.
And I can't thank you enough for, you know, doing a radio show on it. So I want to thank you personally.
Thank you very much. Well, listen, thank you very much because, you know, look, this is a magic carpet ride. You know, the last two sides in the amateur levels. I keep forgetting the year, but I know the Dallas Roma FC went to the fourth round. They beat the former Chivas USA side, but they lost to Los Angeles Galaxy in the fourth round. Eric Winalda, who is currently, as you know, he's a Fox soccer analyst for the Bundesliga for the coverage for the World Cup next year. He is also a manager now for the LA Wolves, but the last run he had was with California FC and got to the fourth round, sadly losing to the Seattle Sounders. But still, though, this, you know, this is going to be a huge matchup. And, you know, what are you expecting from the DC side of things? I mean, what are we expecting?
Well, I read an article today. Now, they're saying that they're not going to play a lot of their starters, that they might play two, maybe three. I don't know if that's going to change. There was an article that I read online today, so I'm not exactly sure what they're going to do. Daniel, no matter what they do, I'm so proud of the guys. They won the $15,000 for being the last team, amateur team in the Lamar Cup. I mean, it's what they've done so far is amazing. And like I said, hopefully it will continue tomorrow. I know the guys are going to be ready. It's going to be a hot night, and everybody's super excited. Can't wait for it.
Yeah, I can't wait for it myself. I'm going to definitely tune in on the computer, and I'm definitely going to be watching what your guys do against DC United, and this is going to be absolutely – I mean, I don't have to ask you any questions. I can hear the excitement in your voice. I can hear how happy you are. I can hear about what is going on with yourself, your family, and, you know, everyone in the area that is so happy for you, and I'm happy for you as well, because this is a ride that obviously you never want to stop. You want to keep going as far as you can.
Yeah, Daniel, you just took the words out of my mouth. It's the story of the summer. We're really, really excited. But to be honest with you, I'm more excited. I'm happy. Like I said, it's not about us. It's about Christos FC. And like I said, it's nice for us to be along for the ride. I always joke around with Jody and Hayslip, and I go, you're a 20-year overnight sensation, you know, because we've been sponsoring them for 20 years, and up to this point, you know, they really haven't gotten any press, but they've succeeded at every level, and for them to get this, like I said, I'm happy for the current roster, the guys are going to be playing tomorrow. I'm so excited for them, happy for them to get the opportunity, and anyone that's ever played for Christos FC and the original guys that, you know, founded a team that are still part of it. It's literally a brotherhood. You know, these guys do it for the actually love of the game. You know, it's a lot of time and effort for them. So, yeah, I'm super pumped for them. I'm super excited. I think I can speak for my family.
Yeah, I'm very happy for you and your family as well, because this is one of those rare moments where you hear and you talk to people that, you know, in this great tournament that, I mean, you know, someone can call it, you know, the way the NCAA Final Four is, it's kind of like this, but it's not really like this, because you don't see amateur players playing against these colleges for the national championship in college basketball. You're playing right now on the road, you're playing for a spot in the fifth round draw for the national championship of the U.S. Soccer Federation. I mean, that's just huge in it within itself.
And that's what's phenomenal about it. Just like I said, it's just a phenomenal. So you've got an amateur team playing in MLS, which is the highest level of soccer you can play in the United States. It's the all-American story. It doesn't get any better than that. And that's why I think the story has resonated with everyone, why there's so much excitement. I got a call from Greece. I emailed the guy back. I did a phone interview. I think one of the players got a call from Italy. I mean, it's truly, Daniel, it's just amazing what has happened.
That's amazing. I mean, how long have you had this store?
So the store's been in our family for 55 years.
Mm-hmm.
55 years it's been in the family, started by my father.
That's amazing. That's wonderful to hear.
And it's just nice that, you know, that we're able to sponsor them, and it's become what it's become. And I'm really excited with what they've also done. They've also, you know, they're doing Christos FC. There's three different teams, and they also set up a 501c. They did a clinic about 2 months ago in Annapolis for underprivileged youth, about 100 kids that would otherwise never get to play. So, you know, it's really what it's growing into is just I'm really proud to be associated with it, and I can't thank the guys enough.
And can't thank you enough. And I can't thank you enough for joining me tonight. Good luck tomorrow night. I expect a full house, and I hope and pray, but I do hope that Cinderella continues to grace you with those glass soccer cleats. So thank you very much, Nick. I really do appreciate it,
Daniel,
luck tomorrow night.
Thank you, sir. I just want to say thank you for having me on. I really appreciate it. It was an honor and a privilege, and go Christos FC tomorrow. Thank you, sir.
All right.
Good
thank
night.
You, sir. You have a good night. That is Nick Christopoulos, of the owner of the family-owned Christos discount liquor store just around the Baltimore area. And what a great feeling that is. What a wonderful feeling to hear how this man is ready for his side's fourth-round matchup against DC United tomorrow night. Joining me right now is a gentleman that you all know. He has had his own Open Cup success with the Chicago Fire back in the day when they got started in MLS back in 1998. He's now setting up this brand new National Independent Soccer Association Division III League. It is the one and the only, the Mr. Midas of soccer. The Mr. Midas of soccer, Peter Will. Peter, thank you for joining me tonight. I hope you heard Mr. Christopoulos, Christos FC owner. They're excited, man. They're ready to go for tomorrow night in the Open Cup fourth rounder.
It's wonderful. That's what that tournament is all about. And in many ways, it's what the sport of soccer is all about around the country. I mean, such a wonderful success story, and my congratulations to him and his club.
Oh, absolutely. It's wonderful to hear, and it's wonderful. It's also wonderful to hear the excitement coming out of his mouth about this and his voice. He's ready to go. He's the toast of the town right now. He's unbelievable. But here's something that's also unbelievable. You, along with the North American Soccer League as well as the National Premier Soccer League, you are creating this third division league to bridge a gap. Just before we even get to that, when did this whole thing start? Why did it come about?
Yeah, I guess it really started to come about in November. And I had the idea that it was important to the NASL at the point, as well as NPSL, but really to both, to give both leagues relevance. And I proposed this idea to both of them. And
that
point, they both wanted to do it. They both wanted to have that league.
And that's fantastic to hear. Mm-hmm.
They both wanted to do it, but a month later, the NASL had their own issues and didn't have the bandwidth to be able to attend to it. And similar with the NPSL, they thought it was a good idea, but after looking into doing it themselves, they decided they couldn't. So they asked me and Club 9 Sports to see if we could put it together. And over the last year, I've been talking to dozens and dozens of groups around the country to talk to them about starting professional soccer teams. Some of them had existing amateur teams, some did not. And so I went back to most of those groups with this idea, and it was almost universally embraced. They loved the idea of a stepping stone to a second division league where the expense level wasn't as high, and it created some relevance for these other two leagues. You know, it created a connection between Division II and Division IV, and it was the start of what could be something big. And certainly promotion relegation is getting all the talk, but that's really only one small part. I shouldn't say small part, but one part of this connection between the three leagues that I think is so critical. If we can really establish a number of connections, and today I tweeted out that there are seven of them that we've come up with so far, things like marketing between the leagues, broadcast arrangements between the leagues, sponsorships between the three leagues, et cetera, and competitive issues as well. Maybe even create a cup of some sort with the previous season's finalists from the three leagues. If you can create that connection, rather than having these three island leagues that are just out there by themselves, you have this connection. where every game becomes meaningful. Every team has meaning not just within their own league, but in connection with leagues above them or below them.
And that sounds like something I think we need. I think there's plenty of room for another league getting ready and connecting with, of course, what goes on with the NESL and what happens with the MPSL. Would this mean basically a full, like a single table league, or would we have, like what the MPSL has, you know, separate conferences, different divisions, and then it moves, I guess, you know, back and forth, and then you get to the NESL where it's one league table?
Right. Well, this is a league where the owners have 100% control of the governance. So it's a question for the investors. At this point, the investors are saying they would like to have a full season with Eastern and Western conferences playing only in their own conference, and then at the end of the year taking the division winners. Ultimately, when it fully populates to 24 teams, there will be 4 16-team divisions. And then at the end of the season, you take the winners of the four divisions and have semifinals and finals.
That's fantastic. I think that's great to hear. And with the way things are going right now, obviously both NESL and the USL are in second division, I would have to assume that because you are going to have this third division ready to go next year, and the USL will have their D3 league next year, in 2019, I apologize. It just sounds like that there's more room to have competitive soccer in this country, and it sounds like I'm not against having more competitive clubs in competitive leagues. I think this is a wonderful idea, to be honest with you.
Yeah, it's a large country. There's a lot of markets. And there's room for different leagues, especially if they have different models, business models, competition models. That gives everyone a choice, whether it's the fan, the player, the coaches, the owners, sponsors, broadcasters. It's good to have alternatives. I think that ultimately forces the best to rise.
Yeah, I agree with you there. So how is this going to get started? You're going to start with, for next year, I believe it was 8 to 10 teams, or maybe it's more, and then you're going to keep growing every year. Who can you inform us of who is committed to this league or not yet?
We have projections that we'll have 8 to 12 teams for the first year. We've received 10 letters of intent to date. Although I received through a phone conversation another commitment today that we would get an 11th letter of intent. And I'd be surprised if we don't get a number more LOIs in the next few weeks. I mean, just in the last 6 days, Daniel, I've had inquiries from 13 different markets since this news broke about how to get a team in NESA. They've read, especially the Chris Kivlihan article was very in-depth and analytical and explained it. And so the response has been good. And not just because we get an LOI doesn't mean that group will come to fruition. They still have to pay the entry fee, and we still have to get sanctioning from U.S. Soccer. So it's still a number of hurdles to complete, and I'm cautiously optimistic we'll do that. And the plan, or I should say the projection, is to fully populate in the next 3 or 4 years. We don't want to grow too fast, although the real limiting factor is whether or not there are quality ownership groups, management groups, venue, and market. If you get those four things right, it should be successful. And from a market standpoint, there isn't really a quintessential description of a third division market. And it's already proven out in USL that the third division can work conceptually in large, medium, or small markets. I mean, you can't take an MLS team, for instance, and put it in a 400,000 or 500,000 MSA. but there mm-hmm. are 500,000 MSAs that absolutely could support a third division team. So the pool of markets is larger, and the pool of investors is also considerably larger, because you don't have to be in the billionaire boys club. The minimum net worth for the controlling interest of a D3 team, according to U.S. soccer standards, is currently $10 million. And that's it's a lot of money to you and me, Daniel, but it is a large pool of potential owners out there in the U.S. And what's happening now, just demographically, this age wave of people that have grown up with the sport of soccer now are getting to the age where many of them that have an interest, even a passion for soccer, have high net worth and an interest in owning or investing in professional soccer teams.
That's really great to hear, Peter. And you know what? Why not? I mean, we don't mind switching around the norm, you might say. But why name it the National Independent Soccer Association? Why did you feel that had to be the name of the league?
Well, the league's brand development committee settled on it, and it has I think first they wanted the first word to start with an N, so it would align with the NFL. But independent, is a key word in that league, and it's a focus on how the owners themselves are independent. They're not beholden to a league investor or any other outside influence. And it's perhaps too strong a word, because ultimately we intend this league to be aligned with a Division II league and a Division IV league, and in some ways dependent on those other leagues. But certainly that independence of the owner, the entrepreneurial spirit of these investors, I think is exemplified in the word independent.
Well, Peter, I really hope U.S. Soccer does agree to allow the NISA to become part of the U.S. soccer fabric of professional leagues in this country. And I really do hope that this success does continue on, because you have a reputation to uphold, Peter. You know, you are the Midas of all soccer in this country, which, and I know I'm joking around, and in a certain way I'm not, because I just watching what you've done in MLS and what you've done in the NASL, and now this with the Indy 11, and now this NISA, I mean, I have a funny feeling they will not tell you no. I think it will be another yes in the feather in your cap.
Thank you very much. You know, the onus is on us to show that this will be a sustainable league, will be a force for good in American soccer, and that will help not only NISA succeed, but ultimately I'd like to make sure that it helps the whole sport succeed. And that means helping stabilize the NASL, NPSL, if they choose to align with us, and make the sport grow, continue to grow, and give relevance to these other leagues that in some ways are islands, and really create a structure that connects them up and down.
Yeah, I think that's sometimes what we need at times, structure within our leagues. Before I let you go, and this is reviewing the Open Cup fourth round, and I know Chicago right now is doing well. Sadly, Indy 11 got eliminated in the second round, but would you mind sharing your experiences when you won the Chicago Fire's first ever U.S. Open Cup championship, when you won that double back in 1998, surprisingly? Just tell us your feelings of that day.
You know, it was so emotional because the Open Cup had been moved. Originally, it was supposed to be in Virginia Beach against the Columbus Crew prior to MLS Cup. There was a hurricane that canceled the game. It was rescheduled in Chicago for the week after MLS Cup. So it ended up being a homecoming for the MLS Cup champion Chicago Fire just a week or so after winning that championship. And the way the Fire won was unforgettable. Frank Klopas, the hometown kid, scoring the overtime goal as a substitute to beat the Fire's biggest rival, the Columbus Crew, was sheer joy. And really one of the highest points of my career. And anyone that was in that stadium that day will never forget it.
And Peter, thank you very much for your time. I always appreciate it. Thank you for coming on the show to talk about this new venture that you're trying to help out, not just for the game in the country, but to help out with these other leagues to make a bridge that has to be filling a gap. But thank you so much as always, and I hope to talk to you again soon. Good night, and take care, sir.
Thank you, Daniel, and thank you for talking up and supporting the U.S. Open Cup. It's a great tournament and deserves every word of coverage it gets.
Thank you very much, Peter. I appreciate it. Have a good night now. Thank you.
Good night.
Peter Wilt, Club 9 Sports runner, owner, chairman, and, of course, the man that is trying to restart a new league in the United States, the National Independent Soccer Association. And, you know, you just got to say that, you know, you got to give him credit for trying to get this thing going, to get this thing moving. There are some that might be saying, do we really need this league? And you never know. But it will all come down when U.S. Soccer starts to listen to Peter Wilt, and we'll see what happens with this third division pro soccer league, the National Independent Soccer Association. We'll see what happens as we move forward. As we continue on with this round four preview, couldn't come on live today, but my friend Neil Morris, of course, from WRAL SportsFan.com. We're going to preview the three NASL teams that are remaining of the six American sides. As we have, of course, San Francisco Deltas traveling to the San Jose Earthquakes. We have Miami FC traveling to Central Florida to take on Orlando City. And North Carolina FC hosting the Houston Dynamo, Mr. Neil Morris of WRAL SportsFan.com. Daniel Feuerstein, once again, the American Soccer Show, as we talk about this big preview for the Lamar Hunt U.S. Open Cup fourth round proper. Joining me right now to cover the NASL side of these matches, Neil Morris from WRAL Sports Fan down in Cary, Durham, and Raleigh, North Carolina. Neil, thank you again as always, and welcome back.
Thanks, Daniel. It's great to be here as always.
And you know what, Neil? This is going to be a big, big midweek game. Once again, the Open Cup is coming around, and we got three NASL teams remaining in the action, and whoever wins their matches against their MLS sides, it will go straight to the fifth-round draw. Let's go ahead and talk about the big battle that's going to be in Florida. Orlando City of MLS is going to host Miami FC, and I think we can say Miami FC has been the big surprise this year in the spring season.
Oh, I agree. I think so. Although, you know, with the amount of money that they've spent on payroll and the strong fall season that they had last year, I don't know that their performance was necessarily unexpected. I think most people thought that they would be one of the stronger NASL teams coming into the year, and they've certainly performed that way. They're a few points ahead of their nearest rivals, particularly the Jacksonville Armada. But in almost every statistical category, offensive and now defensive, they're at the top of the NASL listings.
Yeah, they really are, and I really think.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm just.
Their performance in the Open Cup, I guess, to a certain extent, is a surprise, only given sort of the team's lack of history there, and they kind of fell out early last year. But they've done quite well in the league, and I guess they're hoping to extend that outside of the league.
I don't know if you've been to Orlando at all yet, but obviously that stadium, I've been there, it's absolutely fantastic. A great home field advantage for Orlando City, but maybe Miami might try some trickery if they can to go over there?
Well, they've got players with MLS experience. Where you're talking about guys like Poku and others, you know, Johnny Steele perhaps. They've got a lot of depth. They've got, you know, one of the things that Miami has that at least augurs well for their potential in the Open Cup is that they've got that thing that a lot of lower division teams don't have, and that is depth of roster. And that becomes important not necessarily in an individual game situation, but if your Open Cup games come in the middle of league play, coaches can sort of, you know, deny it all they want to, but squad rotation becomes important. Fatigue becomes important. Depth becomes important. So, you know, the one thing that Miami has is that they can squad, they can rotate their squad and have, you know, guys with the MLS experience in some positions coming off the bench, which most lower division teams do not have, at least not in abundance.
Yeah.
So I guess if you're looking for something that that at least gives Miami a head shoulders advantage above some of the other lower division teams, it is that, and it certainly helped them, I think, on May 31st when they outlasted the Tampa Bay Rowdies, who have performed quite well in USL this year. And I thought that was a pick'em game that might be decided strictly according to whose home ground it was, and Miami was lucky enough to get that game at home. You know, playing at Orlando, especially in that new stadium where they might have a decent crowd, even though it's a midweek game, that could be a difficult trip for Miami. But again, they've got the depth that even though they're in the midst of the NASL spring season, they can rotate. So I think it'll at least help them be able to stay in the game. Just travel, home ground and Open Cup matters a lot, and especially if you're playing in your regular stadium. So it's going to be tough, but I think it'll be a good game.
I think so too. The late nighter on June 14th, the Deltas of San Francisco, there'll be heading into the Bay, not too far away, taking on the San Jose Earthquakes at Avaya Stadium. I think Mark Dos Santos so far in the expansion team that he has right now, some good, some bad, but I think he's done a pretty good job so far in the Open Cup.
I agree. It's an expansion team. They're sitting in tied for third position in the league table right now, which I think a lot of folks wouldn't necessarily have expected that, although there's not a lot separating the second place team from the fifth place team at the moment. But yeah, the Deltas have given up the third fewest goals in the league. They haven't scored a great many, but they've done enough to have a respectable record, including one of the more interesting quirks of their schedule is that they only have one win at home, with two draws and two losses. But they've got three wins and three draws and no losses on the road. So, you know, I guess when you have a team that is defense-minded, when you have, if they decide to play Romelu Pasier at keeper on Wednesday instead of substituting one of their second-string keepers for squad rotation, when you have a team that is at least capable from a defensive point of view, they've got a few players on their team that have MLS experience as well. And in looking at at least their league schedule, they haven't lost on the road this year. Now, going to a place like Avaya to play San Jose is a whole different deal from traveling to Edmonton or North Carolina. At the same time, you've got a team that travels well, defends well, has a quality goalkeeper. They don't score goals in abundance, which may cause them problems against an MLS team. You know, I probably give them the least chance of the three NASL teams that are playing simply because of the newness of the team. Again, going on the road to an established MLS team, I think they're going to have tough sledding. But if you're going to bank on anything with them, it is that they have an experienced coach that is defensive minded, and some experienced players that they've managed to cobble together. And again, they could give good showing as well if San Jose runs out a totally reserve lineup, which they could very well do. But again, for an expansion team, it's going to be tough. That said, you know, they traveled in the third round against Phoenix Rising, a team that's been on the move lately, bringing in a lot of big name players and bigger crowds and bigger money and all the rest of it, and I thought that San Francisco was primed to go down in that game, and they end up with a 2-1 win. So they've already shown that they can go on the road and win in the Open Cup competition. It's just a matter of whether, you know, with a lot of these NESL teams, whether these games that are still coming in the middle of back-to-back league games is eventually going to take a toll, and I think, you know, San Francisco is again a case in point of that. You know, one interesting thing about the NASL teams this year, there have been occasions the past few years and I haven't quite looked up the calendar yet, but there have been on occasion, once you get to this stage of the Open Cup, where it has sometimes coincided with the NESL spring season, back when it was an imbalanced spring and fall, back when it was maybe 10 games in the spring and 20 in the fall. And so the spring season break, so to speak, came sooner. And that gave some NESL teams, particularly if they were staying home, an advantage, particularly against MLS teams that were in the middle of their schedule. Well, this year it's almost reversed because of the FIFA break. You've got a team, for instance, the next game I'm going to talk about, North Carolina, they're playing road games. They were at New York last weekend. They're going to be at Indy this weekend, and then they're playing at home in the middle, whereas Houston Dynamo, who they're playing on Wednesday, are coming in with a 10-day break, although some of their players were away on international duty. So it's almost the reverse of what it's been in the last several years, where the NESL teams had a built-in break with their schedule, whereas the MLS teams came in thick and fast. This year, it's almost the reverse. And certainly, if it's not the reverse for the MLS team, the NASL teams are certainly in the middle of a full schedule, because the spring season and the fall season this year are equal. They're 16 games each, and they have not hit their mid-season break yet.
And finally, Neil, let's go to your neck of the woods. North Carolina FC are going to be hosting the Houston Dynamo. For Colin Clark, I think it's another time for him to prove to MLS sides, not saying he's going to leave North Carolina FC, but just to say, hey, listen, remember me? Look what my team's going to do to you in the Open Cup.
Well, and you know, Clark makes no bones about it. He's dined out on these getting one up on the MLS teams, or the league at least, that he feels like maybe discounted him years ago when he was at FC Dallas and had some success and was summarily sacked. And so he's always relished the opportunity to get one up on a visiting MLS team, whether it was a win over the Galaxy in CONCACAF competition when he was at Puerto Rico, or 5 wins over MLS teams over a 3-year span from 2012 to 2014 with the Carolina Railhawks. Now, NCFC, when they were the Railhawks, had a history of success in the Open Cup. They relished it. They always bid to host those games. There's not the same facility issue that some NESL teams and USL teams, for that matter, encounter, whether it's facility availability or whether their lease agreement maybe not extend to adding extra games on the schedule. That's a big unknown, or a big thing that nobody ever talks about as far as whether a team is able to host or where they're able to host. You know, North Carolina has never had that issue because they built in a certain number of extra potential home games into their lease of Wake Met Soccer Park, especially for such things as international friendlies and Open Cup matches, so that they don't have to pay extra money on their lease to host these games. It's just added money from ticket revenue and concessions. So it's a benefit to them to host these games. It's not a detriment like it is for some teams who may have to scramble to either rent the facility they play in again or find another facility. So they always bid to host these games, and I think that has helped them over the years. That being said, you know, 2 years ago, we talk about the success of 2012 to 2014, which culminated with the third win over the Galaxy when they rolled out Robbie Keane, Landon Donovan, and essentially the entire first team against the Railhawks, and the Railhawks won. You know, the Railhawks got to the quarterfinals that year for the second straight year, lost to FC Dallas. And then in 2015, which was just a bad year all the way around with the FIFA scandal that broke, they got bounced very early in the tournament by the Charlotte Independents. Last year, they did get their MLS home game in the third or fourth round of the Open Cup, and played a very tough game against the New England Revolution and ended up losing on a late Revolution goal. Of course, the Revolution went on to the championship and lost. But it were runners up in the Open Cup last year, so it wasn't like they weren't taking the game seriously. A couple of bounces Carolina could have won last year, but they haven't had that big Open Cup win in a couple of seasons. This year, again, the schedule's not doing them very many favors with two road games. But this game coming between two road games, they've got a number of players who are a little bit injured right now, whether it's Connor Tobin or James Marcelin. I'd be surprised if either of them played. Who knows who they're going to rotate out, who just players who are just tired or beat up from last weekend's game at the Cosmos, which ended up being a 2-2 draw. So, you know, the NCFC team that comes in Wednesday is still hungry and still has that pedigree, and they know the history of this team in the Open Cup. You know, and Houston might be doing some rotation as well, just because they've got a game 3 days after this Wednesday's game at the Galaxy. But they're also coming in with 10 days off, so they may have a little bit more flexibility on who they play than they would normally do. So, the NCFC team coming in Wednesday is familiar with their own history. They know the importance of the game. They're going to give it their all, but I think from just a personnel point of view, they're not coming in as rested and ready as some of the teams in the past. So I'm interested to see if that plays a role in what the outcome is on Wednesday.
Yeah, I agree with you there as well. It's going to be a lot of fun. And, of course, once again, the winners of this matchup from the NASL, they could move on to the fifth round draw, and we'll see who they will face against either at home or on the road at the end of June. So, Neil, a lot of excitement in the NASL. More than one club will be in this fourth round, and we'll see what happens after this coming Wednesday night. Thank you so much, and talk to you soon.
Look forward to it, Daniel. Thanks for having me on.
That's Neil Morris, WRAL sports fan down in Cary, Durham, and Raleigh, North Carolina, as he covers North Carolina FC. And as he is in the NASL, of course, it should be some exciting matches as we get ready for these fourth-round games. Now to continue on with the USL, unfortunately wanted to have Chad Hollingsworth on from Scratching the Pitch. Unfortunately, was not available tonight, but you know, when you're looking at some of these games here, and I think the ones or the few that you want to see that I think could be a big, big time and a big matchup, of course, you would have to say the Battle of Ohio. For the very first time, pardon me, we're going to see FC Cincinnati hosting the Columbus Crew over at Nippert Stadium. I don't think Columbus has ever felt an away presence outside of MLS like they're going to face with FC Cincinnati. I really think that FC Cincinnati, it's going to be filled to the hilt at Nippert Stadium on the campus of the University of Cincinnati in Ohio, and that's going to be a huge one. That's more than bragging rights. That could be a real domination. That could be a real domination of sorts. So that one is going to be very interesting to watch. Excuse me, I'm sorry. And, of course, we're going to see typical matchups here. Rochester Rhinos against New England Revolution. This time it will not be on the campus at Harvard University. It will be in Providence, Rhode Island, at Providence College over at Anderson Stadium. We'll see what happens there. But I think New England Revolution are going to take it seriously, and I think the Revolution are going to go out there and they're going to perform at a very, very, in a confident way. They'll be the home side, of course, so we'll see what happens there. But I truly believe that that should be a good matchup between Jay Heaps and Bob Lilly trying to match wits with each other. Now, once again, this time you don't have to worry about, well, is this team an affiliate of the Union or not? Harrisburg City Islanders traveling back to go to Talon Energy Stadium to take on the Philadelphia Union, and who knows what's going to happen with this one. But we will see what's happening. And once again, Bill Boettcher, in my view, probably one of the better coaches on the lower levels all the way around. Him, Bob Lilly of Rochester, those are the two that – and James O'Connor as well with Louisville City. In my view, the three best managers in the United Soccer Leagues of today. I mean, you've watched Bob Lilly. I've watched James O'Connor. I was over at the Montclair State University soccer field with the Red Bulls 2 taking on Louisville City. So I have seen what has been going on with Red Bulls 2, or should I say Louisville City at the moment. Of course, watching the destruction they put on Tartan Devils of Oak Avalon was amazing. So we'll see what happens there. Atlanta United in their first ever U.S. Open Cup matchup as they're going to take on the Charleston Battery. Now, once again, as I have always said, this is not going to be an upset because Atlanta is in MLS. It would be the other way around because of the way the Charleston Battery have performed in the Open Cup, and they have been to the final before. And it's just one of those moments where you have to say that if Charleston beats Atlanta, that's not an upset. And I'm not trying to be disparaging. I'm not trying to be anti, oh, this year ridiculous. Look how Atlanta United is playing. And that's true. Atlanta United is playing very strong. They're playing very well. They're dominant at home. They've done well. Road form can be maybe a bit of a question mark. But still, though, the way Atlanta is and the way they are playing, the instant success has been fantastic. But, I still maintain Atlanta United, if they lose to the Charleston Battery, it's not an upset at all. It's not an upset. That's the truth. It's not an upset. I'm sorry to say it, because Atlanta United is still an expansion side in the levels of American soccer. So, if they beat Charleston Battery, to me that's more of an upset because Charleston is one of the tougher teams in the USL, and they play very well at home. They also play well on the road now. So we'll see what happens with the Battery, and this will be over at Fifth Third Bank Stadium in Kennesaw State University, the campus there at Kennesaw, Georgia, which I understand is the former home of the former Women's United Soccer Association's Atlanta Beat. So that should be interesting of within itself. The battle between Texas and Oklahoma continues on as FC Dallas is going to take on the Tulsa Roughnecks. And this will be, of course, at Westcott Field and Southern Methodist University in Dallas, Texas, at SMU. Don't know how far that is from Dallas itself, from the center city. But at least that gives the construction workers more time, and probably they don't have to worry about, having a match interrupting them building the new Soccer Hall of Fame over there on one of the ends of the stadium. But still, though, it's just great to see this happen, and it's great to see that the Hall of Fame will be building over there, even though, I mean, only onto New York, too far away from everything and anything at least. And I never went. Excuse me, I'm sorry about that. That never went up there. I should have, maybe, just to check it out. But, you know, it's just one of those things where you just got to say that for the Soccer Hall of Fame, you know, you hope it's going to be put in a great location, which it looks like it is. So we'll see what happens. But once again, Toyota Field, is going to get a break from FC Dallas, so they're going to play over there, and I think that's not a bad thing. Colorado Rapids against Oklahoma City Energy, which will be at Dick's Sporting Goods Park. Tim Howard, in my opinion, that should be, and that's also, excuse me, that's also a Tuesday nighter, I should say, as they moved the game to Tuesday night. Tim Howard in goal, and of course he hasn't been in an Open Cup match in a very long time. Let me tell you what happened. And I'd like to say that I saw Tim Howard, of course, when he was playing with the Metro Stars. He got into the tournament, of course, as the backup keeper to, at the time, I think it was still Tony Miola, and then Johnny Walker, of course, coming in. Tim Howard had a phenomenal Open Cup run. Did great against the Tampa Bay Mutiny back in the day with a 3-0 victory. He got that huge victory against the Columbus Crew in the penalty kick shootout at the Metro Stars back at the time were able to advance through. It was that Miami Fusion semifinal matchup that really was a problem that they couldn't get past. And, you know, but still, though, Tim Howard, I think he is definitely going to give the Rapids a lot of stability and goal for that one. Pardon me. Sacramento Republic will be hosting Real Salt Lake. And while Salt Lake is still kind of like in a funk, I expect the Sacramento Republic to just take them on and, you know, just play them very hard. That's what I expect. I expect Sacramento Republic to show no mercy because I think they have the advantage at home. LA Galaxy taking on Orange County SC at the StubHub Center's track and stadium in their practice facility on the campus in Carson. So I just think that's going to be a very interesting matchup. And once again, everyone, just to watch these games in these Open Cup matches, it's going to be exciting. It's going to be a lot of fun. As we've already had, you know, just to reiterate back to Mr. Nick Christopoulos, you know, that's the voice of happiness. That's the voice of, I cannot believe what I'm seeing here. I can't believe what I am watching. I cannot believe that everything that's going on with his club, especially in the Open Cup, and everybody knows about the Open Cup. Everyone loves the Open Cup. And this is why you have, or at least I try to give a show about the Open Cup, because it has to be talked about. This is like the magic of the FA Cup. This is the magic of the U.S. Open Cup. The magic of the U.S. Open Cup is, this is what happens when you have these sides, especially in the lower levels, in the amateur levels, semi-professional levels. No one's expecting you to go this far. And right now, Christos FC has that opportunity. Christos FC has that chance to make a bigger name for themselves. Dallas Roma had an amazing run in the Open Cup till they lost to the Los Angeles Galaxy. Eric Winalda and California FC had that huge run till they got knocked off by the Seattle Sounders. And now, right now, Christos FC is up next. They are up next, possibly, trying to find a way to beat DC United. Everyone in Baltimore, as you heard from Mr. Nick Christopoulos, they are loving it. Everyone's honking their horn, giving them the attention they deserve. The local press is talking to them. The local sports media is talking to them. U.S. Soccer. And once again, if you go to U.S. Soccer's website, go to their Open Cup section and you watch that video of what they've done. And they continue to give great coverage of this tournament. I think we're going to see, you know, more and more fun articles and fun videos out of this whole thing. I mean, this is what you love to talk about. This is what you love to hear. I mean, they've done so many wonderful things so far. They've had a destruction, three-goal destruction, three-goal clean sheet over Fredericksburg FC in the NPSL. Then they go to Richmond, Virginia. Pardon me. They go to Richmond, Virginia and defeat the Kickers late. They go to Chicago FC United, defeat that club early, and held on. And now they have an opportunity to take on DC United. Now they have an opportunity to take on DC United. And they can continue their legendary run to the fifth round draw if they get that far. Tuesday night, live on, go to U.S. Soccer's Open Cup section. Look for the schedule. There should be a stream available. Watch it. and just have some fun and let it go, folks. Have some fun and let it go. This is going to be one of probably the best matches that we will ever see. And you know what? It's going to be a blast. I think it's going to be a blast, and it's going to be a lot of fun. Well, ladies and gentlemen, it's time to preview the big fourth round U.S. Open Cup match that probably we will ever see. And that means it's the New York City rivalry, the Hudson River rivalry. And why not talk about it with probably two of the best guys that I know that can talk about it. They do the radio for both the Red Bulls and for New York City FC. We have Matt Harmon for Red Bull Radio, of course, on TuneIn. And we have Glenn Crooks, the analyst for NYCFC on WFAN Sports Radio 66 AM and 101.9 FM. Gentlemen, welcome to the show. Matt, welcome to the show for the first time. Thank you very much for coming on.
It's a pleasure, Dan. Looking forward to having a little banter back and forth with my man, Glenn.
Hello, Matt. How you doing, man?
I'm good, Crooksy. How are you?
I'm excellent. I'm sitting here at the computer, and there's the amount of soccer stuff that comes through every minute of every day is really phenomenal. And there's not enough hours in the day, Dan, to cover everything that
there's
you want.
There's not enough hours. I know. There's not enough hours in the day. But obviously, the day that this matchup was confirmed, Red Bulls on a coin flip winning the toss to host the match at Red Bull Arena, which will be at 8 o'clock Eastern this coming Wednesday night. Matt, I got to tell you, you already had visions of not just banter, but everything being thrown at everyone else 6 ways till Sunday.
Well, listen, it's going to make for an exciting fourth round for sure. I mean, you think about from a Red Bull perspective, the last 2 years that we've been doing the games on Red Bull Radio, these fourth rounds, it was Atlanta and then the Cosmos after that in 2015. And last year in this fourth round, we went up to Rochester. So to be one of those all MLS games, and listen, they're used to it. In Portland and Seattle, they've done it a bunch the last couple of years in the Open Cup, and I guess it's only fitting that it becomes something that New York City and New Jersey and metro area fans can start to enjoy a little bit.
I agree with you there. And Glenn, just to talk about the NYCFC side of things, the last 2 years, it's been a penalty kick shootout loss and a one-goal loss on the campus of Fordham University to the New York Cosmos. Would you I don't think we'd be lying to say that they're happy the Cosmos got eliminated by Reading United early in this tournament?
I don't know exactly how they feel, but it's been miserable, and that's no disrespect to the Cosmos. The Cosmos outplayed New York City in both of those matches. And the one thing Patrick – I was at training today. The one thing Patrick Vieira said, and he said it a couple of times since he knew the matchup had arisen – is that he learned, and this is what I like about Patrick. You know, he's made some mistakes, and he admits to them. And the thing he learned last year is that he made too many changes to the lineup, and it didn't create enough of a balance where they could play the game the way they wanted to. Now, that, you know, from game to game, you're not always certain how your team's just going to play, you know, if you had all your regulars out there. But there'll be some changes, but this I think you're going to see a lot of regulars in the starting lineup, and that was the indication just watching training today, and maybe some reserves who normally are coming off the bench will start. The biggest thing is in goal. It's Eirik Johansson hasn't played a minute this year. It's all been Sean Johnson, but Johansson's also international, so you know you're limited on your international slots for the U.S. Open Cup. So how Patrick decides to juggle this will be interesting. You know, Johansson's the backup keeper too, so I don't know how he's going to keep him off the 18 unless he goes with Andre Rawls behind Sean Johnson. But I do think it's going to be a more competitive team that he puts out, and whether that translates into anything at Red Bull Arena, I don't know.
Glenn, why don't you just I have my sheet out. Why don't you just go ahead and give me the starting 11? I promise I won't share it with anybody with Red Bull, and I'll just start circling my numbers.
I really don't know the 11, but because Patrick will not tell me. But I don't think he really – I don't think as of this day, at this training session, I don't think he knew who his starting 11 were going to be for Wednesday. Because for one, whether Maxime Cheneau, whether he would play Maxime Cheneau or not, this guy, I don't know if you, how much you guys have seen Maxime Cheneau, the guy that got during the summer transfer last year, center back from Luxembourg, and he just didn't fit in last year, and you know, he never looked the part to the extent that we thought he would. Well, this year he has. He's certainly one of the better central defenders in the league. And he's taken over a leadership role as well. He's become comfortable with the unit. He speaks English enough so that he can communicate with the players around him effectively. He doesn't speak Spanish because there's some players around him that speak Spanish, but the guy has developed into a leader based on how he plays, and he's become vocal. And it's really been vital to New York City. Their rear guard is much more secure this year than it was in either of the first 2 years, and he's the major reason. And he had he had an X-ray today, and they're waiting to see what the X-ray shows before they figure out what they're going to do with him.
Mm-hmm. I was going to say, Matt, you know, I can't wait to see if – and I was at training today myself. I didn't see – Jesse didn't divulge starting 11 or anything like that, but I would love to see how Tyler Adams, coming back from the U.S. under-20s in the under-20 World Cup, performs against a huge rivalry like what this has been since it started 2 years ago. I think Tyler Adams might relish this moment.
Well, you would think that he would, Dan, and he's been good this year. You know, I mean, you're talking about a kid who's 18, and look at his last couple of weeks of his life. He was with the U-20s in the World Cup, comes home, goes to his prom. Now he's back in full swing. His first game back will be against, you know, New York's biggest rival, or closest rival, I should say, no disrespect to D.C., in an Open Cup match, which is a single elimination tournament. And listen, Red Bull has made no bones about the fact since this coaching staff and administration took over that this is a tournament that, despite what's happened in years past, this is a tournament they take serious. And, you know, they've had some, I wouldn't say bad luck, they've just run into a Philadelphia Union team the last couple of years, one time beat him in penalty kicks, playing a man down, and last year down in Philly. So I think for both of these teams, and I actually talked about this with somebody the other day, and said I think for both of these teams, if you're worried about either team being focused, because usually at this stage there are those potential slip-ups, like, okay, so you're playing somebody from the USL or you're playing an NASL team, maybe you don't take it as serious. This is the first opportunity for both of these teams, and what's a pretty big rivalry, to really make a stand and knock somebody out of a one-off tournament. I think it sets up to be a real fun and exciting kind of game, which we haven't necessarily seen from these teams, in that there's just been regular season games. They haven't played in the playoffs yet. They haven't played in a tournament. This is the first opportunity for that, and I think it's going to be really fun.
And what do you think, Glenn? I mean, this is right now. New York City FC has been one and done in the fourth round the last 2 years. This is a big opportunity now. It's against a rival they know very, very well, of course, going back and forth over the Hudson River. Do we see New York City FC maybe finally getting some good fortune? I mean, like we've said many times, I mean, this is a tournament. This is a one and done. There's no replay in the Open Cup. It's either going to be done in regulation, done in extra time, or they're going to another shootout.
No, I think it's going to be a good match. Neither team has been in especially good form leading into the international break. And I did want to mention, you know, what I told you, I was on the computer and looking at a few things, and I went back and watched the YouTube clip of Jesse last year after the loss to Philadelphia. Well, not after, I guess it was sometime in the second half, with the throwing of the ball and the kicking of the ball, and Jim Curtin for Philadelphia giving the touchdowns. I mean, that was a pretty classic departure from that game, and but it also shows how vital he and how competitive he is and wants to win this thing. But look, here's the thing on the New York City side. They have been demolished in this derby. I hesitate to call it a legitimate rivalry because of how poorly New York City has played in these matches. And just, I mean, statistically, the one that really stands out, BWP has 8 goals in 6 matches against New York City. New York City has 5 goals total in those 6 matches. I mean, it's really been a Red Bull brigade, and I do think I think the Red Bulls have always had the chip on their shoulder. New York City came into the league with a lot of high priced players and all the ballyhoo and playing at Yankee Stadium and the 5 boroughs and everything and maybe getting more publicity before they even won a game. And I think that ship may have transferred a little bit over to the New York City side. We'll see, because I think that's what they were missing. And guys like Chanel and Alex Ring in the midfield, this guy Alex Ring, if you haven't seen this guy either too closely, you're going to enjoy him, Matt, from the opposition side, because he's like a Dax McCarty. He's like the guys in your midfield with the Red Bulls who are just so tough and with a bite and they hate to lose. And that's the kind of player that they just didn't have consistently in New York City over the first 2 years. This guy and Chanel, man, they get it done. They get it done.
Well, listen, I think one of the things that's been interesting during the course of the week, and Glenn talks about it from one side of Red Bull kind of dominating this derby over the course of the last couple of years. I heard Jesse at practice basically praising NYCFC about how talented they are this year. So there's no doubt that there's been some gamesmanship in the course of the first 2 years, and it's continued into this week because I think both teams want to try and play the underdog role going into this game. But when you play in any kind of tournament, and Dan, you just mentioned it, it's fun because there is no redos. You get one 90-minute match to basically try and knock out somebody from a rivalry standpoint, knowing, of course, that you're going to play them in another 10 days in an MLS regular season game. So I think this does. I think it sets up for a way for one of these teams to make an early claim of saying, we are the better of the two in the metro area this year. And, oh, by the way, we just knocked you out of the tournament on top of it.
Yeah, that's the big thing right there. Bragging rights are going to be large. They're going to be huge. And it's one of those things where if it's Red Bulls all day, all night, it just continues on. And that's the one thing about sometimes these scheduling of an Open Cup match and then a league match. I mean, these two sides, gentlemen, are going to go back at it again at Red Bull Arena the next weekend. And that's going to be on nationally televised on Fox. So that's going to be another moment where here we go again, Glenn.
No, well, if you want to get me cranked up, the MLS schedule, just for instance, New York City has played Orlando City 3 times already, and they are done with their regular season series with Orlando City. They're done with their regular season series with DC United. They're done with their regular season series with Atlanta United. They're all in the Eastern Conference, and New York City hasn't played their arch rival, the Red Bulls, yet. And won't play them until June 24th, like you said, 10 days later. And then I think the final of the 3 regular matches is like August the 27th. So over about a 10-week period, they're going to play Red Bulls 4 times, 3 in a regular season, and then that's it. I think the MLS scheduling, I don't know how it stands for all the other teams. And I know Yankee Stadium with the Yankees plays a bit of a role here. But the scheduling has been very, very poor in that respect. There is no way you should finish 3 games against a team in your conference before June or in early June. And that's what's happened with Orlando City. It's not right because, the reason you spread out the games is because maybe one of your top players is injured for the first game of the series and you get him back to the second or the third, whatever it might be. You get a severe ankle sprain and you miss all 3 games. It's crazy.
Yeah, I mean, Matt, I think we can also understand where Glenn's coming from. I mean, there's been times I scratch my head with the MLS scheduling myself when it comes to the Red Bulls and their schedule. But, you know, this is what they do, unfortunately, and just sometimes the scheduler just doesn't make it the way it should.
Do you think I'm – do you think it's crazy they're playing the Open Cup match before they've even played in the regular season? Or maybe I'm – Yeah.
No, Glenn. I think you have a good point. And I think you could. I think the argument would be, okay, so if you haven't played all three games against Orlando yet, I think that's the bigger problem. Like, okay, if you're playing Orlando three times, if you're NYC, how come one of those games couldn't have been against Red Bull at some point during the year? And listen, we all know the reason. It's because they want to have games in the summertime that's when the league is starting to heat up a little bit more rather than playing in March, April, and May. But I don't disagree with you at all. And I can remember saying it last year too. You had the three times that the teams played last year and all of the games seemed like they were one after the other. Okay. We just played each other. And now in another 2 weeks, we're going to play each other again. And it is unfortunate because so for NYC and Orlando, and that I think that's a good example, if you have all of your games done, not just injury, but what's the next piece of the MLS schedule that is really intriguing? Well, it's when the transfer window opens up. Your team could be completely different, not just because of injury, but because of players you either bring in, get rid of, change over. In Red Bull's case, they've made no bones about the fact that they feel like they need to go out and add a couple of pieces. So if you can spread the games out a little bit more, it certainly makes a whole lot of sense.
That's absolutely correct, Matt. I mean, that's the other huge, huge piece to the difficulty of all that. And you talk about the three games last year that they seemed all close together. They're also all played in the afternoon in the summer heat. And I'm telling you, I know it affected the first two games, the 7-0 game and the 2-0 game, where everybody knows about the 7-0 game. Red Bulls clobbering New York City at the stadium, but then later on, it's not too further down the road. Red Bulls came in a little bit more exhausted, and New York City wins their only game in the series, 2-0, and then 4-1 the last time they played. But these games, and they're playing. You know why they're playing in the afternoon? Because of Fox or ESPN. So MLS is like tied down to the networks. These games should be played in the evening. Period. End of story.
Listen, Glenn, you could play the game at 6 o'clock, even if you didn't want to play it at 7. Play it at 5 o'clock. Don't play it. I totally agree. I remember looking at that schedule last year and being like, oh my God, we're going to be playing. I think one of the games was over 4th of July weekend, unless I'm thinking of something wrong at Yankee Stadium, and it was in the middle of the day at 1 o'clock in the afternoon. I mean, that's crazy.
Well, this is a question I eventually want to ask the commissioner or someone. Because it's it seems that this game that the June 24th game at Red Bull Arena is at 1:30 in the afternoon. It's going to be on Fox, on the big Fox, and that's understandable. But why can't the league go to Fox or ESPN or who's ever carrying this game and say, look, we have to find another date then, because it takes away from the games. The games are not as any athlete understands this. And in the middle of the summer day, where it's hot and it's humid, New Jersey, New York, it can get brutal. The game needs to be played at night for the quality of play. So you get this game played in the middle of the game. This is MLS probably would consider this, maybe with the exception of Seattle-Portland, their top rivalry, and it's because of the market. So don't play it on 1:30 on a Saturday afternoon. It's don't do that.
Especially if you're trying to grow the product, you want to try as best as you can to have it be at an optimum level, and playing at 1 o'clock in the afternoon as opposed to 7 o'clock at night, you're not doing the players or the product a whole lot of service.
Well, guys, tell me, does Fox do night games? They sure do.
They do night games, actually. Yeah, they do, but it's on Fox Sports 1. But here's the thing, Glenn. You got to remember, Fox on Saturday nights now are doing a Saturday night baseball game, nationally televised audience. So I think that's where you've got a legitimate gripe, but you know, Fox also also covers Major League Baseball, so you know that's where I think you get why it's going to be at 1:30 in the afternoon. I'm not disagreeing with you. I think it should. If Fox is going to try and cater to MLS or at least have MLS be on the major Fox network, national network, and have it once in a while, you know, as a 7 o'clock at night game, then you're going to have to ask Major League Baseball to broadcast some of those games like at 1 o'clock or 2 o'clock in the afternoon on a Saturday, which no one minds.
Look, MLS is screwing up this rivalry. Two of those three games last year were played in terrible conditions for two of the teams because of travel and everything else. I'm thinking more about those two games last year, 7-0, 2-0. Neither team was the losing team on both sides was physically and mentally shot. And that, you know, you could, it's not about excuses. It's about the way things were, the way the schedule was molded. You can't do that to this rivalry, my opinion. And you just have to figure out how you can get these games in the evening and put them within a context of a schedule where one of the teams is not playing three matches in 8 days while the other team was playing two. You know, that happened once last year. So you can't do that to the rivalry. And because here's the deal, guys, right? MLS, Matt, I don't know if they've gotten to the Red Bulls on this yet, but they're traveling around the country to the rights holders, and MLS is going and having these meetings. And the biggest thing they're talking about in these meetings is the quality of the play to attract a wider audience. And you're taking away from the quality of the play by the times that they're kicking these off for the big Fox rather than, you know, getting good soccer that's going to be attractive. And like two of those three games last year were not great games to watch. And that's a crime.
No, that's a crime. I would agree with you. I mean, listen, I'm sure we don't want to debate the MLS schedule for the whole time that we're on here talking about the game. But I mean, I think for the first time in probably the whole season, you could actually look at the tables on both sides in the East and the West, and you can get a sense of the playoff picture, even though it's still early in the year, because everyone has finally played about the same number of games. I mean, there was a stretch a couple weeks ago, Steve Jolly, who's my partner on Red Bull Radio, we were talking about things in a Western Conference, and you had one team that had played four more games than FC Dallas, I think, at that point. And it was just, you're looking at it like, how is that even possible? But at some point, I'm sure the league will try and fix some of that stuff. They've done a good job, I feel like, of trying to market things, but they have to take another step plan. And I would agree with you. Like, if you're going to get the games on, especially Big Fox, try and make it as attractive as possible so that people aren't walking away saying, boy, these two teams played in 95-degree heat, and neither one of them really looked like they were at their best. That's the last thing that you want to have happen.
That's right. But, yeah, let's not belabor that. It's just – and I will say I'm making a schedule with 11 teams in each conference as a challenge. But there's more teams coming in. Like, next year could be 23 teams. How are you going to do that? You know, anyway. Hey, Dan, so today,
yes.
And I wonder what you guys, I would like to get both your perspectives, because you're around Red Bulls more than I am. But Patrick was asked to compare the Red Bulls from last year to this year, and he immediately just said, Dax McCarty, you know, on the field, in the locker room, it's not easy to lose a player like Dax. It's always difficult to fill that space with a player like that. And then he went on to just say, look, all the teams he's played on, all the teams in the U.S., Europe, any sport, you look at the personality and the team spirit, and if you don't have those special ingredients, you don't lose championships. So his whole point was just he thinks it's been a big loss for them. So for both of you, you know, observing it a little closer, how big a loss has that been?
You can go ahead, Matt.
I would say that I think everyone at Red Bull would probably say that the year's been a little bit on an inconsistent side, and probably getting rid of someone Blythe Dax, who was a team captain and, you know, obviously meant a lot to the fan base and a lot to the organization. If you made that decision to trade him, and I'm not going to debate whether they should have traded him or not traded him, because I feel like that conversation has happened a million times already. But, yeah, I mean, the other people that have kind of stepped into those roles, I think that probably takes a little bit of time to still develop. You know, Tyler Adams was a guy that we talked about already. I feel like the way that he played at the U-20 World Cup, he should come back with a world of confidence. Sean Davis
Absolutely.
Is another guy. Sean Davis is another guy that, you know, Red Bull thought highly enough of that they even considered making the trade for McCarty. And I feel like he's starting to get back to the Sean Davis we saw a year ago when Dax was injured for about 4 or 5 weeks. So I think if those guys, and they're two young guys or younger guys, I think if those guys can continue to get better, then that conversation probably starts to go away. And I mean, listen, Glenn, I don't know how it was said, but I made the comment before about gamesmanship, and it has gone back and forth between Jesse and Patrick over the course of the last year. And I'm sure there's a little bit of let's try and take a stab at them while we can, because it has been debated. And, you know, obviously, if you look at the roster, that's one thing that's very, very different. And if I was Patrick Vieira, I would probably say the same thing. Like, let's make it a good comparison that makes sense. But in doing that, maybe we can throw a little bit of a dig at the team across the river too.
Yes, absolutely. And now let me just say this though, Glenn, if you don't mind, I agree with Matt. I think it's Tyler Adams that, you know, before he went with the under-20s to South Korea for the World Cup, the first three home matches in a row, Tyler Adams basically plugged a hole and gave plenty of confidence to the veterans. While you do lose a veteran presence like Dax, I don't think you lose the quality of a Dax in Tyler Adams. And I'm not trying to put too much pressure on the kid, but I think he's done enough, not just on the club level, but on the national level, that I could see him, you know, for maybe, you know, the qualifying for Qatar. I mean, I could see him probably trying to qualify for Qatar for that cycle. So other than that, you lose some veteran leadership. I will agree with that. But I think he is filled in for Dax, that he's answered that. Matt, I think he's answered those questions, in my opinion.
Well, I think he's – I don't know that he's fully answered everything, but I think he's going to continue to show that he's going to be able to answer those questions. That's what I would say.
Mm-hmm.
So I think those two guys are good players. I like Sean and Tyler Adams. He was, you know, with the exception of the last game, which was unfortunate, but outside of that, he was the man. I mean, he had all the talk was Josh Sargent, but the Tyler Adams man was impressive. But the point here is this, and take Matt Lampson's comments with the Chicago Fire about, I'm going to say a week or so ago, Dax McCarty is the MVP. This is according to the goalkeeper. Dax McCarty is our MVP, and he was specific about on the field and in the locker room, off the field. So that's an intangible. That's one that's really difficult to measure, and I know it's been discussed, and I'm not here to make a point other than the fact that, you know, Tyler Adams might be a better player than Dax McCarty, but there's more to being just the player. It's the overall leadership, it's the respect factor, it's the experience in the league, and but I'm sure, I know we're all happy for Dax that he's moved on and it's worked out well for him, and look at the Chicago Fire. But if he's the MVP of the Chicago Fire, look where they are. And I'm just saying, that's it's a huge loss, and I was just trying to get a feel for you guys, you know, how you think about it.
Well, I still think on the Red Bull side, it is a TBD, and I say TBD to determine, because they haven't used the money that they acquired in the trade to go out and get the next piece. So I think after the summer transfer window, then I think you could have a better argument of saying, where is this team going forward? What have they done? Who have they added? Then I think you start to get a better conversation. And listen, I can understand that the the thing about Dax is probably going to continue until that happens. And whether it's right or wrong, I mean, people, it's a conversation point for sure. But I think from the Red Bull side of things, they were comfortable enough with the guys that they had behind Dax to go ahead and make the deal. Now it's probably the next part of the conversation is what are they going to do with the money and who are they going to bring in? And hopefully over the course of the next 4 or 5 weeks, we'll have the answer to that when the window opens back up.
Yeah, that's a good point. But I just remember Luis Robles, he's in national team camp in January, and he contemplated leaving camp to go to Dax McCarty's wedding. And it just struck me that it was like, really? And he said, Dax just said, there's no way you're doing that, brother. You know, you stay in camp. But he said it, he was torn that he really wanted to. But I say that, I mentioned that just to, again, the influence of Dax. Obviously, there's a close friendship there. And look, to me, you've got great leadership with Robles and Sasha Kljestan, but maybe just not to the same extent. But it's still very early. I mean, this is like, you guys have been around it, I think, longer than me in terms of really following MLS closely. This is my third season, really, really monitoring it. And it's one of the fascinating aspects is that everybody has a good period, everybody has a bad period. You know, maybe outside of Toronto FC this year, everybody has played poorly and well, and you look at the standings, and there it is. You know, so it's like,
and Glenn, it can happen in the same week. You can play a really good game and then go on the road and play really poorly.
Yeah, so it's Commissioner Garber has set this thing up, man. When parity is, you look it up in the dictionary, it should just say Major League Soccer. Doesn't have to say anything else.
Yep. Exactly, because if you don't have parity, you don't have MLS, that's for sure. Because that's for one thing, gentlemen. You know, that's how this league is. Sometimes, you know, you got a great regular season, and then we get to the playoffs, things go a little hairy. But obviously, especially when you get to Open Cup time, it's even more hairier when you have a great matchup going forward here. But let's just to finish up here, guys, and first of all, thank you very much for being on here. I really do appreciate your time, as always. Matt, overall, what do you think the game plan is? Is it just still pressing? Do they have to maybe pull out a couple of tricks out of the training ground to beat New York City FC? What do you think the Red Bulls need to do to get to the fifth round here?
I mean, listen, at this point, I don't think there's any debate that the style that New York plays is the style that they play. It hasn't really changed in the last couple of years. There's been tweaks, obviously, like with any team, but the game plan is to try and go out and press the game. You know, the one thing that we haven't talked about has been how good Red Bull is at home, and I know that's the case for a lot of teams in Major League Soccer, but statistically, New York has been the best team in Major League Soccer since the building opened when playing at home. They've had maybe a hiccup or two this season, including a loss to the LA Galaxy back last month in May. But, you know, I think it's a team that takes a lot of pride in the fact that they play the way that they do at home. I think they'll take a lot of pride in the fact that it's a rivalry and a derby that they've owned so far with their wins in the six matches that they played. And it's a franchise philosophy that they want to make sure that they go after every game and go after every possible opportunity to win some hardware. So I don't think a whole lot changes in terms of mentality, philosophy. Will there be some sort of tactical difference? I'm sure that you could probably see something a little bit different. But the general mentality, I think, is going to be the same for Red Bull come Wednesday night.
I agree with you there, Matt. And, of course, Glenn, for New York City FC, they're 0-3 right now at Red Bull Arena. And, you know, there are no points on the line here. It's win and you're advanced, lose, and you go home. What changes do you think Vieira is going to try and do against the Red Bulls, and do you think he tries to tweak things up a little bit?
Well, the tweaking has already occurred, and this is another thing. I told you earlier, you know, I respect Patrick because and all any of these rumors that he's heading to Europe as a coach – I don't think it's happening because I don't think he personally thinks he's ready for that yet. And I think he's an excellent coach. I've seen him operate close up in training. I've seen him speak to his team. I mean, I like his approach. But one thing that he learned, last year he was very stubborn with his tactics, his principles, building out of the back. And he, in essence, you know, demanded it. And he, to the point where he really didn't, you didn't see players just lump the ball down the field when they were under, you know, severe pressure. Instead, they would always try to solve it. One thing he's changed this year, and I've heard him explain it in training, he said it to me, and I know it's if you watch the games, it's happening a little bit more frequently. But Sean Johnson, if he doesn't like what he sees, he'll put it really deep down the pitch. If the fullbacks or center backs are under particular pressure, you'll see them just send the ball high and wide in an effort to just clear it, but also maybe get David Villa running the channels. So the tweaking has occurred already, and what the team knows now is that, and they don't have to fear the wrath of Patrick Vieira if they don't try, you know, to solve every little pressure item on the field. You know, they have the liberty now to serve the ball long in those situations, which makes total sense. You know, people were dismissing Vieira's principles at times last year because for teams like Red Bull who press high, and it's a very organized press, but it's a press that, you know, you could look at closely, and I could, you know, if we had a whiteboard here, I could place the players and put them right exactly where Jesse likes to do this counter press. And, you know, I think even though teams know it, it's very difficult because there's a mentality. And the thing I appreciate with Jesse and the Red Bulls is how they just continue to perfect the press, and they work on it, and they watch film on it. And they are very, very legitimately high level with the pressure. And it's very hard to solve. But it leaves their center backs vulnerable. And I think, I'll tell you this. You know, New York City today, the entire training session, they worked on trying to solve the pressure in certain areas where they know the Red Bulls, you know, want to press. And that's no big news because I'm sure that's what teams do. And but if you're just lumping it down the field consistently, that'll never happen with a Vieira team. It will never happen. And then just look for knockdowns and second balls as an exclusive part of your attack. It will never happen. But there is that liberty now to, you know, send it out if you're under undue pressure. So maybe you'll see that a little bit more tomorrow night, more so than what you saw from New York City last year, or Wednesday night, whatever night it is.
It's going to be on Wednesday night, 8 o'clock Eastern time. It'll be streamed. Gentlemen, thank you very much for your time. I do appreciate it. Have a good night, and I will hope to see you both Wednesday night at Red Bull Arena. Take care.
We'll see you there, Dan. Thank you.
All right, Dan. Appreciate it. Glenn, good to catch up with you. I'll see you Wednesday.
Matt, nice chatting, man. Have a good broadcast.
All right, you too.
Thank you.
All right. Matt Harmon, Red Bulls Radio on TuneIn for Red Bull coverage. And, of course, Glenn Crooks of WFAN Sports Radio 66 AM and 101.9 FM in New York City. The big, big New York City rivalry here between both New York City MLS sides. This is going to be exciting. This is going to be tremendous. It's going to be wonderful. And you know what, folks? This entire fourth round matchups will be fantastic. Let's give you the schedule once again. Courtesy of U.S. Soccer. And once again, your three matches for Tuesday night, June 13th, will be at 7:30 p.m. Eastern Time. DC United as the home side against Christos FC at the Maryland Soccerplex in Boyd's, Maryland, 7:30 p.m. pardon me, Eastern Time. And then at 7 p.m. Mountain, 9 p.m. Eastern, Colorado Rapids are going to host Oklahoma City Energy FC at Dick's Sporting Goods Park in Commerce City, Colorado. And then 7:30 p.m. Pacific, 10:30 p.m. Eastern, Seattle Sounders versus the Portland Timbers at Starfire Sports Complex in Tukwila, Washington. Once again, the big Pacific Northwest rivalry is going on strong. For the June 14th matches, at 7 o'clock Eastern Time at Nippert Stadium on the University of Cincinnati campus in Cincinnati, Ohio, FC Cincinnati will be hosting the Columbus Crew. At 7:30 p.m. Eastern Time at Salem Stadium at Wake Med Soccer Park in Cary, North Carolina, North Carolina FC will be hosting the Houston Dynamo. also at 7:30 p.m. Eastern Time, Anderson Stadium in Providence College in Providence, Rhode Island, the New England Revolution will be hosting the Rochester Rhinos. At Talon Energy Stadium in Chester, Pennsylvania, the Philadelphia Union will be hosting the Harrisburg City Islanders. Atlanta United hosting the Charleston Battery. Over at Fifth Third Bank Stadium in Kennesaw State University in Kennesaw, Georgia. 7:30 p.m. Eastern Time, Orlando City SC hosting Miami FC at the Orlando City Stadium in downtown Orlando. The Purple Palace of Orlando City. And 8 o'clock Eastern Time, the New York Red Bulls hosting New York City FC at Red Bull Arena in Harrison, New Jersey. At 8 o'clock Eastern, 7 o'clock Central, St. Louis FC will be taking on the Chicago Fire at Toyota Stadium at the WWT Soccer Park in Fenton, Missouri. FC Dallas hosting the Tulsa Roughnecks, 8 o'clock Eastern, 7 o'clock Central, at the Westcott Field in Southern Methodist University in Dallas, Texas. The other MLS matchup, June 14th, Sporting Kansas City hosting Minnesota United FC at Children's Mercies Park, Kansas City, Kansas, 8:30 Eastern, 7:30 Central. Sacramento Republic hosting Real Salt Lake at the Papa Murphy's Park in Sacramento, California, 10:30 Eastern, 7:30 Pacific. LA Galaxy hosting the Orange County SC of USL at the StubHub Center Track Stadium in Carson, California. And San Jose Earthquakes hosting the San Francisco Deltas at Avaya Stadium in San Jose, California. All of those at 10:30 p.m. Eastern Time. 7:30 p.m. Pacific. Fifth round draw will be this coming Thursday after round four matches are done, and we will find out who will face whom in the fifth round in the end of June, and the fifth round, the round of 16, will be on June 28th, as the fifth round draw will happen on June 15th. Time yet not sure of, but we'll find out probably by tomorrow night or by, I should say, the end of the games on Wednesday night or at Thursday morning. So it should be exciting, should be a lot of fun. We'll see what happens, and we're going to have some fun here. So let's hope and watch to see what's going to happen. Folks, we're going to end the show early tonight. I know I like to have a two-hour show, but you know what? We've already discussed what's going to happen in the U.S. Open Cup, the new NISA League coming on. I want to thank my guests for tonight, Mr. Nick Christopoulos, the owner of Christos Discount Liquors and the owner of Christos FC in the fourth round matchup against DC United tomorrow night. I also want to thank Peter Wilt. I want to thank Neil Morris. I also want to thank Matt Harmon and Glenn Crooks previewing this big matchup, of course, New York City FC coming over to the Hudson River, coming over the Hudson River to Harrison, New Jersey to take on the New York Red Bulls at Red Bull Arena, 8 o'clock Eastern Time. I'm your host, Daniel Feuerstein. Thank you very much for joining me tonight. Join me this coming Friday as we talk about these fourth round matches of Omar Hunt U.S. Open Cup. Have a good night. Thank you very much for listening. Bye-bye. Take care. So long. And please, as always, enjoy your football. Thank you. Have a good night, everybody. Talk to you next time. Bye-bye for now.